Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 404.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we admit that we never actually cared about the solar eclipse. I just don't. And I'm your host, Nagin Farsad. And I was so nervous that my 5-year-old would take off her glasses that I stood there and held the glasses on her face and never even turned around to look at the dumb eclipse there. That's how I did it. It was actually quite stressful, and that's how I experienced it. It was partial anyways in New York City. It wasn't the same as totality, okay?
It wasn't the same, but it was still nice.
All right. Millie, you know what? Your kind is not welcome here. By wow. Which I mean people who really like think I'm going to clip it. No, but
my God, Millie, let's hang up.
I'm with 2 eclipsologists, and I didn't know that that's what I was walking into. Okay, but listen, did I say that I'm your host, Nagin Farsad? Maybe.
Yes.
But what else? The other important point is that today we're going to talk about the phenomenon that is the hush trip, which I think is way more exciting than an eclipse. We'll also talk about the truth behind the personal trainer stereotype and how he may or may not be stealing your spouse. We'll also talk about third parties and a little political riffraff. And finally, virtual first dates. Should that be something? All right, today I'm joined by, now you've already heard their voices, I've already offended them both to the core. So that's how we started this show. We started the show on a note of friction and possible just deterioration of friendships. But nevertheless, I love both of these ladies. They're so great. We have with us a comedian and host of the Go Touch podcast, which I have been on, which is such a fantastic podcast.
Go Touch Grass.
Go Touch Grass. What did I say?
Go Touch.
Oh, I didn't say grass?
Yeah.
It's because I was.
It's not that kind of podcast.
Go Touch. Guys, it's the Go Touch Grass podcast, and it is phenomenal. I have been on this podcast. It's so fun. If you like Fake Nation, you'll definitely love that pod, and you'll definitely love this wonderful comedian because she's so fun and funny and just always delightful. It is the wonderful Millie Tamarez. Hey, Millie.
Hey, hello. Yeah, I did not know I was walking into some eclipse haterism. And yeah, just really quick before you bring on the our other quote, it's just, you know, in this politically divided
world,
times,
yes,
it's nice to have a piece of monoculture
right.
that we can all get behind.
No, I understand.
And we haven't politicized the sun yet. So I'm just excited
have you
that
met,
we could all
have you met solar panels? I believe we did politicize the sun. That said, I think I was the wrong parent to be on eclipse duty is what's going on. Okay. I was too stressed out about the glasses and her taking them off.
So you're the bad cop.
I wasn't the right parent for
you
this.
You know that duct tape is a thing duct tape.
Oh my God, that's what I should have done. That's what I should have done. That other voice you're hearing, she's not only a parenting advice person, but I mean, first of all, she's written books. She's written every magazine you've ever read. She's been on the show a million times. She's so smart. She's a communication strategist. In fact, that's how smart she is. And I mean, I know listeners have long been emailing me that they love this panelist, and that's why we keep bringing her back. It is the wonderful Sally Cohn. Hey, Sally.
No, you know what, friend? Listen, I've decided in the last 5 seconds since you brought up all of my, like, I have to tell you, I've been so upset. I didn't even get to see a little bit of eclipse. I was in a meeting all day. I was happy to be in the meeting, and it was cloudy where we were. It was fine, but I'm really bummed I didn't go actually travel to see totality. So there, but nonetheless, Nagin, I love you. And you know what? It's okay. I have lots of friends I don't agree with. I think that's what I'm going to go out on a limb. Makes America great.
Yeah.
Boo. And what was I going to say? New York wasn't full totality, but it was 90%. And it was a big, and it was dark. Like, it did get dark. And I also have to say, I'm so glad I met the writer for every single magazine, because now I can congratulate Sally on writing for Tiger Beat and telling me which NSYNC Backstreet Boys. I mean, I have a hot take, which is that I would sleep with anybody from Backstreet Boys over anybody in NSYNC. Like, the ugliest member of Backstreet Boys is hotter than the hottest member of NSYNC.
Wow.
That is my hot take.
You know,
think about that. Think about it.
I have I think listeners know this, that my black husband has a couple of weird tastes. One is, he's such a huge fan of Backstreet Boys, I can't tell you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, literally mm-hmm. black man. And then the other thing is, a huge, huge fan of Garth Brooks. Those two things in the same sentence with this guy. So
I don't know, Cowboy Carter, it's a thing.
My husband is straight, but I think he would probably agree with you that Backstreet Boys is hotter than NSYNC. So anyways, and I'm
like
agnostic on that issue. So,
But you know what's hotter than all of them? A solar eclipse.
That eclipse was hot. All right. Guys, before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that they could go to patreon.com/thegeekforsun to support their show, because this is the kind of shit we just go nuts for an extended period of time, and then it's an ep, and then you get it as a bonus. It's so fun. So for as little as $4 a month, you can support the show at patreon.com/thegeekforsun. Now.
Yeah, say it faster so that no one can type it in, Nagin. Great strategy. Everyone, that's patreon.com/NaginFarsad.
Thank you so much, Sally.
What do you call your fans? Like the Beyonce fans are the Beehive.
Right.
The Rihanna fans are the Rihanna Navy. Are there like the Farsadians?
Ooh.
The Nagin. No,
You know what, Andrew? People of Fake the Nation is like so boring and in many syllables. If anyone in the nation of People of Fake the Nation have a suggestion for what we might be called, please let me know.
The Fakers?
Poftins.
The Fakers.
Poftins.
What?
Poftins. Poftins. People have faked the nation. Puffins.
Oh, cute. That's kind of cute.
I'm just going to use pronoun.
That's kind of
acronym.
It's also like, I would say fakers.
Fakers. All right.
That's fun.
So let folks, this is your time to vote. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. So we're dipping into the cultural grab bag where we found a new thing. I guess it's kind of new. It's called the Hush Trip. A Hush Trip is one where the employee works remotely from a location other than their usual home without letting their bosses know. So I guess first, like, what do you think of the Hush Trip? I mean, and do you see it happening, Sally?
Well, let's just be clear to start. I don't have a real job, do any of us?
No, this is like, this is us putting on our civilian hats.
Let's pontificate about the real people with the real jobs. I do know people who do it.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, right? Like most of the people, so I do communications consulting and media training and public speaking coaching, and I tend to mostly work with people who are fairly advanced in their career. So they just say it. They just are honest about it. There's no hushing. They're like,
I'm in Sicily.
I'm in Anguilla in my hotel room doing this training. I'm like, that's cool, man. Good for
Sally,
you.
I have to say, you do have a real job. You just don't have like a 9-to-5 salaried position. But your job is very real. Do not diminish it. This is not my podcast,
but we just
got to uplift each other. But yeah, you're saying that you know, it is part of the game that you are freelancing and doing all this shit. But executives, like you're saying, you know, we got to recap celebrate each other.
Because I think the hush part of it is really more for the junior associates, right?
Correct. That's what I guess I'm getting at. Like, I can go work from anywhere. Nobody's complaining.
Yeah.
They don't expect anything from me. And again, I think the bosses out there can go work from anywhere. And maybe they downplay it a little bit. Like, I'm at my beach house and they don't want maybe their junior folks to know.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be, I hear through the grapevine, get this, that in all matters, younger people and new entrants to the workplace don't feel empowered to be vocal. And that's probably, that part's nothing new.
Right. I mean, I think that's a rite of passage, right? Is to feel not vocal. Like, I feel like you shouldn't express anything for a few years. Millie?
Yeah, I feel like it's, I feel different ways. Obviously, I also don't have a real job. I have 18 jobs put together to make half of one salary.
Yeah.
So I definitely have taken meetings from all over, but I definitely feel like a lot of working remotely and a lot of the issues and the clashes is based on power and like the sense of pay. You know, the older generation feels like you have to pay your dues and your life has to suck ass for the first 10 or 15 years of your career, and then you can do whatever you want. And when they see younger people doing whatever they want, it's like, it's not cool. You're not supposed to be like mixing work and stuff. You know, you're supposed to be just working, or like, you're not supposed to be doing things without my permission. And I want to be the one to grant you PTO or this and that. And like, so I understand that, like, people not wanting to tell their employers. On the other hand, as someone who doesn't have a real set job, like, it fucking sucks to have to work on a vacation.
Yes!
Like, I don't want to be doing
shit.
Right. I don't, but like, sometimes you have to. Sometimes you plan a fucking vacation because you're extremely burnt out and you don't get PTO. And then a gig that you've been waiting to come through for 6 months is like, okay, we can only do next Thursday. And you're like, damn, next Thursday I'm supposed to be titties out on the beach, but I guess I'll take this call for an hour that you keep pushing back 30 times. And that's what I'm saying. So would I do it? No, but I do understand why people do it. I think the more gangster thing is when people can somehow, I know people who can pimp themselves out to do two full-time remote jobs at once, like,
oh, that's
at different
crazy
companies.
Yeah.
That is power.
What?
That
yeah,
is power.
Yeah. I feel like that was happening more during the pandemic. I feel like that trend has been, there's been a little bit of a clampdown on that. I say
that's
with no
thing?
Evidence.
Yeah. Oh, my friend literally was a VP at some ad agency and also doing a whole other job, getting two salaries at once. People do it. People can still do it. You know what I mean? Like, with, because some jobs, you know,
they have better time management skills than I do.
Yeah. Well, it's like having a secret family. I mean, I can't
exactly.
picture.
She's heard that.
Exactly. Is there
something you want to tell us?
No, the thing I want to tell you
is Sally. Her husband is black. Husband's black. Her daughter's not blind. And she hates the eclipse.
Listen, I think in closing, I will give myself the final word, which is that two young people, I had to do, like, again, I don't have a real job, but like I have 75 other jobs put together. Mm-hmm. And I had a big deadline that was like integrated into a vacation, and it sucked. Like, it made the vacation suck. I hated myself. I hated the job. I hated everything. I would like to make a big push for take the time off.
Yeah.
And then go to Anguilla, and not the executives. I get what they're doing, but like, I'm talking about and also some of my best times in when I was a junior associate, okay, because I did have real jobs before, was exactly. when I would just be like, I'm calling in sick. I'm so sick. And then I would be like on a plane to Portugal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Racking up that credit card debt. It was fucking beautiful what I did. I also recommend doing stuff like that. Let's move
collect
on.
Collect your points, kids. Collect those air miles.
Oh, yes. We're going to move on to this next issue. Such an important issue. I want to tackle the questions surrounding personal trainers. Okay, their reputation is that they steal your woman. This is a very just male and heterosexual segment of the segment.
I can't wait.
But Sally, really, let's dive in with you. But like, I am curious, just in general, like, have you seen this happen? Has a trainer entered your, you know, periphery and stolen a person? Romantic.
You really want to tackle this issue, don't you?
The New York Times did, so I would like to as well.
I'm going to defer to Millie.
Millie?
Yeah. Yeah, so basically it's like, you know, this New York Times article was like, look, I'm a hot personal trainer, but I'm not trying to steal your wife. I know men are threatened by my hotness and all this stuff. And like, yes, it happens, but... Okay, here's my thing, yeah. right? This is another thing where I can see this issue, but is it a problem that I face with? No. I cannot think of when I feel the most unattractive and when I don't want someone to talk to me than when I'm working out.
Yeah.
And the idea of, like, it's just not my thing where I don't want, first of all, a man to talk to me. I live by Bridgerton rules where unless we're getting married, do not fucking address me at all. I will not be in a room alone with a man. Do not, you will get dueled. You will get smacked in the face with a white glove if you address me solo. So do I want a man talking to me when I work out? No. Do I want a man to touch me while I'm working out? No. So this is not my problem. Also, but I have people in my family who, my cousin, this is what I'll say. My cousin, his wife left him for a personal trainer. But I'll say this. So it doesn't happen.
So it
yes.
happens.
But also, was he a good husband? Did he like, you know what I mean?
And?
It's like, people don't, no, he was not.
Okay.
People don't leave.
It was
you know
implied,
what I'm saying?
Nadine. It was implied.
It was implied.
I needed
verbal
acknowledgement.
People don't leave happy families for the personal trainer if the thing is good
right,
and whatever.
Right.
Now, I'm just saying, you know, for people who've been cheated on, whatever, it's not your fault, this and that. But also, if your wife's leaving you for a personal trainer, maybe, you know, whatever.
Well, it's funny because my husband does a lot of, like, whatever, athletic things because he's a former football player and that kind of never left, a college football player, that never left him, right? So he's, like, still does a lot of, like, intense working out things and he does these little competitions or whatever. And he's, like, doing a partnered competition and coming up that he's training for, and his partner is a woman, and I don't know, she's probably hot, like whatever, she probably has abs and all that stuff. I don't like actually like I'm not concerned. I don't know, I personally like I guess I'm just on my also I don't know I guess I'm also just like not terribly jealous of a jealous person, so I'm not concerned. But I think but the way this article read, this incredibly important article, was that like there's just jealousy is a big part of all of this. And also, like, my husband used to work in boutique fitness gyms and stuff like that, and he said basically because I did my research by asking him, it's not that like there was a lot of stealing going on necessarily, but there is just a lot of sex going on. And the one person mm-hmm. once got fired at a gym he worked at because they had sex with a client literally like after they closed the gym doors, like in the gym room or whatever.
I mean, that's hot.
Which I thought was hilarious.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I just want to say two things here. Number one, I did have friends, I'm not going to name them, I hope they're not listening, this happened to, where, but it was a female trainer and husband, wife, and he went off the female trainer, so we can work always. I guess the part of it I didn't like in the article and in general that I resent in these conversations, and I talk with my 15-year-old daughter about this a lot, is this idea of like, stealing someone's man or stealing someone's woman as though they're property, and I feel
and
like
as
this,
though they have
honestly,
no agency.
I'm going to stand up for my straight men here. It get like the rhetoric tends to really play out with them as though they're just these dumb oafs with no self control or morals. And like a hot woman comes along and pays them attention. And same thing with the it's like, you know, if you. You know, and again, going back to that one example, my friend's like, it's probably not the first time he was cheating, right? Like, and that's his choice, and that's about him, and it's not about, I wouldn't put it on the trainer or his ex-wife, right? And I just think there's a lot of, I don't know, a lot of our discourse around this, I think, is kind of generally messed up. And I will say, if a trainer flirts with me, it is motivating. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's true.
Just put that there. I'm just going to put that there.
I mean, that is also kind of like the bartender thing of like, it's kind of their job. You want a hot person to be flirting with you.
That's
it's part
true.
Of the fantasy.
That's
it's
true.
Part of the motivation. But I also do want to get to a nuanced part that I feel like we're ignoring in this conversation. The New York Times did acknowledge. And it's like the reality of dating somebody who is hot, who whatever, like has abs, is that they drink a lot of protein shakes. And guess what? Their farts smell so bad. And I want you to know that. I just want you to be informed.
Yeah, thank you so much,
I want
Millie.
You to be informed that if you go after the guy with abs or whatever, you're like, oh, this person has a hot body. Their farts smell terrible. They're clogging
toilets.
Thank
you so much. Millie is our little in-house Reuters feed giving us just the bare facts.
We have to.
We have to move on.
Nagin, don't worry because that hot partner.
Shook it.
That hard partner that your husband, he probably smelled her farts once or twice and he's like, I'm going home.
You know what?
I'm going to eat my tagine at home. What is the Persian thing that turns? Anyway, I'm going to go home to my tagine where the farts don't smell that bad.
He just calls me his tagine is what he goes. Yeah. All right, folks, let's take a quick break so that we can think about the Venn diagram of infidelity and personal trainers, and also so that we can hear about our sponsors. And then when we come back, we will talk about other things.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness for like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. You guys, the No Labels movement announced that despite getting on a bunch of states' ballots, they are not going to run a candidate because they couldn't find anyone who would do it. So that's a little fun area of the political arena we're dealing with right now. I find it hilarious. Sally, were you surprised by this, No Labels kind of announcement?
Well, you know what? I was pleasantly surprised insofar as, you know, okay, you have to imagine, right? There were a bunch of politicians, like, imagine, work through the process. They went out, you know, they got money and they're like, hey, can you do it? Will you do it? Will you do it? And presumably a number of people, we don't know how long that list was, we can only guess some of the people who were on it, said no. Now, realistically, I am, of course, a realist and cynic, and I've lived in this country in this world for 47 years now. So I know some of those people probably
you
said,
look great, Sally.
Thanks, man. Probably said no because they're like, well, you know, I'm not going to win. I'm going to be embarrassed. I don't have a path to victory, blah, 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 blah. So there were like egotistical reasons. But I like to think, I hope, I pray, I really want to think that some of those people said no because they're like, you know what? We understand that in our fucked up system, which we all can agree is fucked up, of a two-party system, God, we wish it were different. And it doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon. But in this system, in this moment, with so much at stake, if we did this, we would throw the election to Donald Trump, and we can't risk that. And I gotta hope that there is just this sign, this symbol of a moral compass among center Republicans and center Democrats, and that just warms the cockles of my
cold heart. Clearly, they went after. I think Joe Manchin, Chris Christie, probably a Mitt Romney or whatever. Maybe he's too old. I don't know. But anyways, they went after those types of people that have a lot of name recognition and who are in the middle. And none of those guys were wanted to be the spoiler. Like, they just didn't want a handover be the reason. They didn't want a Jill Stein this situation. And, you know, or Ralph Nader. Don't mean to make it just about Jill. There's other people that try and spoil. And the interesting thing is that No Labels has been around for a long time. This is actually, I feel like, the first time they've become sort of national mainstream, you know, but they've been around since like the Obama years, trying to run people. Now, what this means with No Labels, like kind of officially dropping out, is that RFK is the only real option as a third party. And Millie, what are your, I mean, does he have you freaking out or what are you feeling about RFK?
Well, rich people who hate vaccines are not kind of my thing, you know what I mean? And I think when you brought up that like nobody wants to run for No Labels, I was a little concerned because I'm like, does that mean that there are no more people in this country that have a humiliation kink? But clearly, no, because RFK does have a humiliation kink.
He's the one.
And I'm going to tell you, wasn't it at his campaign event where two men were farting, like battling farts? There were two 80-year-old men at one of his fundraisers.
But did they have protein shakes prior?
Well, I mean, listen, let me tell you, RFK definitely takes some protein shakes. There are also a number of comedians. I don't know if you saw like the comedians that are doing the RFK fundraisers. Not surprising at all, like Joe Rogan and all these idiots. But
interesting. We had Andrew Heaton on the podcast like some weeks ago, and he was, you know, he's like very much like an independent, almost libertarian or whatever. Like he just hasn't really fallen into place at any party. And he was just like, well, I mean, I'm looking at RFK, and we were like, he's an anti-vaxxer. And he's like, yeah, it's troubling. That part's troubling. And now what came out this week beyond the, you know, his anti-vax stuff, by the way, he is polling above 10% in some polls around 15%. So his support is larger than the gap between Trump and Biden. But as more information comes out about him, because the media will actually cover him as a real candidate, the more ballots he gets on and the more time goes on, he came out and said the January 6th was not an insurrection. And so that I think was maybe.
He also said that Biden is the greatest threat to America and to our democracy, which is like
opposite
look,
day.
Man, I understand from the vaccine thing that you have trouble with, you know, objective fact, but like, come on. Like, what are you like? Come on. Like, you cannot like Biden. You can have problems with some of his policy. Like, that's cool. But didn't try to actually overturn an election and the democratic will of the people, and is not threatening to do it again. Like, it's not even.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is with Republicans is that Biden is a threat to democracy because his son is hung, and that bothers them. his son has a huge penis, and it is the Republicans won't get off of it. They want to look at that laptop. They want to spread those pictures. Oh, it's crazy. And that is the threat to democracy, because Republicans, it can't get through their mind.
Let's move on to another.
I have nothing, Nagano. I have nothing.
Nikki's
Tell
like,
me, please
no
comment
more
on the size and shape of. No, okay, let's move on to another.
She didn't bring up Shape Nagin. You brought that up for yourself.
Well, we all saw the sex tape, and it was disturbing. But he is hung, and I'm just, that's what I'm saying. And it bothers Republicans. It bothers.
Okay,
them.
Well, here's another thing that bothers Republicans. Hey, Segway, what's up? Student debt relief bothers Republicans. And Biden announced another executive order to eliminate student debt. And this time it's like a different type of student debt. I think one of the categories is if your debt has been lingering for 20 years or more, if your debt actually exceeds the amount you originally borrowed because of interest. So there's more categories that you could fall into to get more debt relief. And they've worked harder at making it more foolproof so that it isn't as susceptible to lawsuits. That said, he is already, you know, forgiven a shit ton of debt. So I know people who have had their debt forgiven. Like, it's incredible. So what do you guys think? Do you feel like people are paying attention to these moves?
Not sufficiently. Mm. But, you know, part of the problem with part of the problem with the way the media in 2024 covers politics is that they cover everything as a horse race, meaning they cover the ins and outs of the polls and the attitudes and the feelings and the right. And they don't actually cover policy.
Yeah.
And even when they talk about what Trump has said or what Biden has said, right, like they're covering it in this sort of gossip mill rumor kind of maneuvery strategy way, yeah, and not for the actual substantive difference it's going to make in people's lives. It really, really sucks and is a fundamental disservice to political decision-making, people being informed, to democracy in general, et cetera. So no, of course it's not getting enough attention because literally nothing nothing that Trump substantively did for better or for worse, mostly for worse during his term, and nothing that Biden is doing for better or for worse is actually getting any meaningful substantive analysis. It sucks.
Except for Milley.
I think it's a good thing that he's doing, and I'm glad he's doing it.
One of the things that has gotten, I think, attention to the Biden administration is the Israel policy, which this, like the last week, he went from like, you know, full bear hug of Netanyahu to it, your actions.
No, but even there, I'm sorry. Wait,
so,
like,
so just,
there,
a,
no,
just so that
like
listeners know,
it's an interpersonal thing.
Well,
like,
he was
because well, and okay, the original Biden student loan thing. I am somebody who would have benefited. I am somebody who got most of my student loans under Pell Grants. I'm someone who's been completely fucked with private and public student loans. I can't get a house. My life in shambles, whatever. The thing is, whatever. I mean,
yeah.
We're covering it in therapy. We're working through it. The thing is that it's like the media is not covering it like enough policy things, but Democrats also are doing this need-based shit. They don't want to piss anybody off. They still want to keep their white middle. So they're not doing these sweeping changes that are necessary or big enough. If Biden was like, yo, we fucked up, I thought that if we had the Senate and the House that we would be able to pass all this shit. We had two haters called Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. We couldn't pass anything. But here, we're going to go all in on these swing states. We're going to blah, blah, blah. No, he keeps doing these things that are going to get shot down. It's not big enough. Now, instead of doing 20,000 forgiven for most people, it's going to be 5,000.
Well,
it's
and it's not him. I mean, he literally did do those executive orders. They're
yeah,
lawsuits
but he's not,
shut aspects of those down. I mean, so I think.
But I guess my thing is that he is doing the way that he's going about it, instead of doing like these bigger, big enough changes, he's trying to not piss off the center right. Instead of just saying, look, we have been like, to me personally, I feel like a portion of that party is lost. Like now everything is woke and
DM. But then you don't believe in bipartisanship? Because not because now. What I'm hearing is you don't like incremental change. You want big, huge change. Is that what you
I just
want?
Feel like it, I feel like he's trying to get young people to vote for him by not doing things sweeping and big enough. I mean, that's why people like him, right? Because he's not doing anything too radical.
Big.
And he's whatever. But the thing is, the people in the center aren't going to vote for him.
Okay, Sally, like, you got
he's lost a segment
you got,
of it.
You got a lot of faces, Sally. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I hear the frustration. My analysis of Biden is that he actually was pretty bold and even uncharacteristically progressive in his first 2 years. He really was. He was trying to get, look, he was trying to get huge things done. Some of his green energy policy, some of his infrastructure funding, the student loan debt, like he tried to do some big things and he outlined bigger things he wanted to do. And they had enough little tiny room to maneuver to get some of them done. He had a real problem. Look, he tried to raise corporate taxes. I mean, he did a really important move to try to raise corporate taxes and get rid of the carried interest bullshit. And he got stopped by the centrists in his own effing party. So I think there is a real, would I love his student debt relief right now to be bigger? Of course I would. I'm actually impressed that he's even trying to move it right now when it looked like to me he was trying to tack to the center and be pretty moderate. Mm. But I think the size and the scope of what he's trying to do has more to do with what Nagin's saying, to try to get something done that'll
without
pass
getting
muster
sued
legally, not get sued, not get the embarrassment of it getting thrown out by the courts. But I mean, it is, you know, the problem. This is the problem with governing, right? Like it is, you have to actually maneuver through all these constitutional, legal, and political swerves. And I think, you know, again, are there things I'd rather him do differently? Yes. Would I wish he would have moved quicker on condemning Israel's attacks on Gaza? Especially, yeah. That's a big one
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, huge one, yeah.
And I also know there that we aren't seeing everything he's doing behind the scenes. And I also know that, you know, again, something like this, debt relief, I think it's the right move in the real constraints that he's under. You know.
And I think he also, and I think that he, I think you, you know, as someone who's worked in government, it's like, it's so difficult to get small wins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, it's, and you have to, you have to celebrate those small wins. Like if you believe in the process and the, you know, like the process was sweeping a couple times in American history. And I'm talking the New Deal, and I'm talking like the Great Society. Like there were very few times in American history where things are just hugely sweeping. Most of the time, they're at a smaller scale. Where also, because the other thing is, like economics doesn't want things to be hugely sweeping. Economics wants to be able to predict things and for things to be stable. So there's just a lot of like things, you know what I mean?
So
not to say I sound like an old curmudgeon.
I know, and I want to respond to that because I just feel like I understand these things, and I understand that he's doing these things in an effort to get a younger audience. And as you were saying with the Israel, the thing is that it's just, he has done small wins, but also Roe got overturned. He hasn't ratified, you know, he hasn't like protected abortion. And you know what I mean? So it's like, you're trying to entice young people to be excited about voting for him. And he has done like, there's still money going to Israel. Like yeah. it doesn't, we're covering things like in a interpersonal thing of like, Biden's really mad at Netanyahu. And it's like, okay, good. Well, like he's mad, but he's still giving money. And it's like, we can find money for things that he deems really important and really crucial. But for other things, like, he's not putting, and I'm not saying just him, I'm just saying a lot of establishment yeah. Dems and well, stuff, and this is the frustration of younger people. It's like, it seems like you guys can find a solution and work through government and get these big wins for things that aren't important for young people on day to day.
Yeah.
And you want us to be excited, not only excited, but the real thing in 2020 that has gotten a lot of people, like that got Biden to win in the first place, is that young people fucking voting and knocking on doors and canvassing and all that stuff. And I'm saying that if that's going to happen again, it needs to be a little bit bigger. And again, like you're saying, he needs to be caught trying
things. Let's look at what Trump has announced recently. And to close out this segment, he basically came out saying that, you know, abortion should be put left up to the states. So I don't know, Sally, is that, what is that doing for his, the abortion for the Republicans has become a fucking nightmare, right? Because they're losing voters left and right because of this one issue. Do you think that he kind of carved a space out for himself?
No. And also, you know, again, here we are talking about this horse race. We all can't help it. It's just how we talk about politics these days, right? Yeah. You know, look, here's the deal. The Democrats, including President Biden, incredibly clear on where they stand on choice and reproductive freedom, and have, in fact, you know, been wanting to, making moves to codify the federal right to abortion. They have a problem in that they only control one branch of the legislature. Meanwhile, you've got Trump, who is, you know, literally said he was going to appoint justices who would overturn Roe, champion justices who would overturn Roe, champion the overturning of Roe, and suddenly when there's political blowback, it's like, you know, I'm not so, right? Like, and the two-facedness, again, if anyone watching him, we shouldn't be surprised, right? He was always suggesting that he was being calculating about his position on abortion just to win over whichever group of voters or people he wanted to sway. So, you know, and again, in that same statement, what's interesting is the headline everybody reported was he said it's up to the states, but he also said he was incredibly proud about the role he played in overturning Roe. So he's just trying to in the context of having already kind of scored this major blow. And I actually was incredibly disappointed with the way a lot of the media reported that story because of that kind of twisting of that selection of, they could have chosen, the big headline is he's boasting about overturning Roe.
Right. And also, I mean, you know, I do think I did read this in some places, which is that like the man, it doesn't actually matter what he says because he said every position on this issue since the 90s. He's said he believes in a woman's right to choose. He said a woman should be punished. He said it should be left up to the states. He said he's like he boasted about the overturning. I mean, he said literally everything that you can say. He said all of them. So I think the other headline is we don't know because he's a liar, right? So we'll just, it just like doesn't even really matter.
No, the only thing we can be absolutely sure of is that he will do whatever the hell he feels he needs to do to please or placate the people who elected him and keep himself in power. And again, like, I just don't think with someone like Trump, I don't think you can judge them by their statements. You judge them by their actions. So it would be hollow if he'd, you know, when he talks about creating internment camps for immigrants, I'd be like, oh, that's just a lot of BS rhetoric until you see the fact that he actually has things and actions he did, right? Rounding up and detaining people, collecting family separation, their DNA, family separation. Then you say, oh, okay, I give credence to when he says that. So, you know, I give credence to when he talks about a federal abortion ban, which he apparently has done multiple times because A, there are people pushing him to do it. And B, he actually, right after saying he wouldn't, appointed judges who overturned Roe. So I think we look at his acts and we have plenty of his acts to look at.
All right. Well, folks, let me know. How are you feeling on the horse race, on the lack of policy coverage, on all of it? Let's move on to topic number three. According to Business Insider, broke Gen Zers are skipping real first dates in favor of virtual first dates, like the Zoom variety. According to the dating app Wingman, 65% of 18 to 27-year-olds, that's a 65%, which I thought was a shocking number, choose a video call as a first date instead of meeting IRL. Millie, how does this idea sound to you?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I feel like it's great. I think that right now, I mean, and the article said it was something that happened as a result of the pandemic. And it's something that I was dating during the pandemic. And, you know, right now, dating apps are like the most popular way that you meet somebody nowadays. And the thing is, there's so much manipulation, and like, it's not even, you know, it's the same thing as like a phone screening call. It's like, you can see the resume and everything looks good on paper, but you still have to see, and just so many things pop up, you know, like hearing the voice, hearing how they say, how they talk about the ex, how they talk, you know what I mean? Where it's like, whoa, like, it just takes so much out to like, you know, meet in person. It's a great phone screen. And it's something that definitely was, I think, especially with straight men, you match with them, you say, hi, hi. Then they're like, you want to get a drink later today? And like a mistake that you do, like that I've done early in my 20s, I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll do that. And then you meet the guy and it's just completely different. So I'm like, oh, doing that work of screening a little bit, especially now on the dating apps, now they're only, the Hinge is only asking you like 4 questions and has 5 pictures. Do you want to meet a life partner or a sex partner based on 4 pictures? Maybe not. So having a call, screening, you know, asking these little questions like, what do you think of the Kardashians? And then be like, oh, those girls are fucking bitches. Okay, you know what? I don't think this is going to work out, you know? Like,
that's your like screening question?
I know.
Is that it?
Well, this one girl,
Then if they say something negative, then you don't like them?
Don't like Chloe?
This one girl that I was talking to about dating is like, I tend to ask guys these questions because it usually reveals how they feel about women, how they feel about like entrepreneur, how they feel about like racial, it's very loaded, like how they feel about interracial relationships, how they feel about, it's a back end strategy that you can ask. It's the same shit. It's HR recruiting. That's what you got to realize. Dating is not dating anymore. It's literally HR recruiting.
That's right.
And you got to use backwards questions to try to get these guys to tell the fucking truth.
Oh God. That makes me like so depressed, because it just sounds like we're just filling like data like in a spreadsheet, and then it looks like, and it just sounds like we're most concerned with efficiency here. And I just want to say, guys, love isn't about efficiency. You know what I mean? Sally, what do you think?
Dude, I've been on as many dates as most people have earlobes. So I'm really not in a position. I'm really truly not in a position to comment here. But I will say, it feels to me like we're focused a lot on horse races and not policy. I just think, I got to be honest, I think it really sucks to be single right now. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I just think it sucks. I mean, the pandemic made it sucky, but it was kind of generally sucky. Like, you can't actually meet people in real life. It's hard and sucky. So my heart just goes out to everyone. So I think, listen, if you want to find efficient ways to not waste your time and have to put on real pants, I am absolutely not judging.
Again, and the efficiency thing came up like when we read this piece in Business Insider, like a lot of Zoom, some people really prefer the Zoom dates because you could go on multiple dates in a day without leaving your house and putting on pants, as you're saying. And the other thing that they talked about is that some people feel more comfortable in front of a camera because they put themselves in front of a camera constantly than they'd feel in IRL. That to me was a red flag, because you shouldn't feel more comfortable in front of a camera than you do in front of another human being. Which, I mean, obviously, like, whatever. Like, I'm a fucking, it's obvious, and I'm preaching to the choir and whatever. But also, I think it's like, you know, the other thing that people brought up is the money factor, right? That it's, dating is expensive, and going, and I just want to say again, as the person who racked up so much credit card debt during my dating years, fabulous amounts, that there's just really many ways of doing this cheaply. Like, and also, like, I remember when I was going on online dates, like, I was just, there were times where I was like, can we just like meet in this park and have a coffee, like, and just have a like a chat on a park bench. And like, I did stuff like that because I wasn't even in the one that was usually paying. It was the guy, right? And, but I felt like, I don't want either of us to spend money on what could be someone I will never have sex with, you know? So yeah. I feel like there's just so many ways, and it's not about, like, sure, there's a numbers game involved. Sure, there's a volume issue, and you need to kind of have, you know, meet enough people to find the right one. But there's also, like, something to be said. I mean, you know, in Russia, there was a dating app. They were developing a dating app based on smell because they because smell ends up being a huge factor in pheromones. Like whether or not pheromones and whether or not people are attracted to each other. So I don't know.
I will just say this, like with dating and being single now, as like dark and cap and late stage capitalism as it is to be like, it is like finding a job. It is where it's like, you know, if you just apply online, you're going to get a certain report. If you apply online, go to a job fair, tell your friends, hey, I'm like looking for a job right now. Like everything in combination, that is probably going to yield more results. And yeah, like it is open to like chemistry and all that stuff that you can't find until you meet the person. But I will just say it is depressing to think of people who are just comfortable on camera, but also it does save so much time to like pre-screen and filter as you're developing those. Cause also part of dating is figuring out your own boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that comes from having some kind of practice and pre-screening.
Also, I think in addition to the practice and the pre-screening and all of the administrative tasks that you're describing is literally just telling your friends, hey, I'm also open to be set up. Set me up.
Exactly.
That's another thing too. That I'm like never seeing anyone talk about in all of this. Set up your friends. Okay.
Yeah.
Folks, that is the end of the show. I want for everyone to be able to follow these lovely ladies and everything that they do. Sally Cohen, where do they do that?
I mean, does it matter? I'm on the internets at SallyCohen, KOHN.com, and on most platforms I'm at Sally, KOHN.
Follow Sally. She's incredible. Millie, where do they follow you?
Please, it is so important that you follow me. Nothing has been more important than this. Not even, I'm kidding. No, at Millie Tamarez, Millie_Tamarez, MILOYTAMARZ. And follow us at Go Touch Grass Pod. And thank you so much for having me. I know that I talked about Hunter Biden's penis, so I'm not going to be allowed to be back on, but I love it anyway.
Oh, that's the gateway to getting back on.
No, you're definitely coming back on. Folks, you know where to find me and all the things I do. If you happen to be in Pittsburgh on Thursday night, I'm going to be at doing Wait, Don't Tell Me in Pittsburgh. So look it up. They might still have tickets. I don't really know. I don't control any of that. Otherwise, I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. Thanks so much to our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a reality. And thanks so much to Gabby Alter for our theme music. If you have any ideas or thoughts, you can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And otherwise, we'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.